The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning, we have Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of a company called Contractor, Contraqer. And we're going to talk about contracting and the federal government and some of the challenges that my listeners have and some of the challenges that information technology companies have in providing goods and services to the federal government. It's certainly, if you think technology has changed in the last 10 or 15 years, well, the way the government goes about acquiring equipment has changed, and that's what we're going to focus on today, some of the new things and some of the new developments. But before we begin, let's start off with maybe giving a rough background of both our guests. Scott, tell us about your background, how you wound up with this company here.
Good morning, John. So I got an MBA from Georgetown University in the mid-90s, and that's actually where Dwight and I met. So we've known each other for about 20 years. I had a first startup experience right after school, and then I spent about 4 years at MicroStrategy, a local tech star company. Then I went to a company called GTSI, which is a mid-market federal reseller. I was there for about 6.5 years. And then after that, I was with Booz Allen Hamilton for 4.5 years. And in July of 2013, I decided to take a big leap of faith and join Dwight and his new startup called Contraqer, and I haven't looked back.
Wow, that's been great. Yeah, top secret clearance, is that right? I see in your background.
Yep, I have one. Had one at Booz Allen. It might have expired at this point. It's been a couple of years, but
But you know the rules then. most important. Yeah, big company, small companies. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your background, Dwight, please.
So as Scott mentioned, we met at the Georgetown MBA program in the 90s, and while I was there, I started my first startup with four partners, a company called The Motley Fool, which is still doing quite well. I was the CTO there for about 7 years, and after that, went to another small startup, and then Capital One, Legg Mason, and a couple other companies, including Input. I was CIO for about a year. In August of 2012, mm-hmm. I started thinking, this whole procurement thing, I think there's a way to do it better. And finally, in October of that year, I said, I'm going to go ahead and do this. And I started the company to, as I joke, single-handedly fix procurement management.
Single-handedly, yay! That's not a reach, is it?
No.
That's called a BHAG, right?
And I'm going to run a marathon and be a quarterback for the Super Bowl team and at the same time design a diesel automobile.
Well, it's maybe. People usually pat me on the head and be like, that's so cute. Why don't you go back and get your job done?
Huh? Why don't you go back and become a linebacker for the Redskins? Exactly. Oh, that'd be a lot easier, I think. I mean, I heard that through the earphones. I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. Call the police, someone from.
It's funny. The first person I told it to, they said, put the crack pipe down.
Step away from the microphone.
Exactly.
You're going to single-handedly. Well, at least you have Scott to help you here. Maybe too much, four hands here or something.
Exactly.
You know? These two guys here are going to single-handedly change the acquisition. I went to your website this morning, and this little elevator pitch or a summary statement is, procurement solution for small and medium organizations. Boy, that kind of distills it, doesn't it? So If you are a small to medium organization and you're providing a technology service to the federal government, then they can go to your site and maybe learn about what you can do, give you a call, find out, and all kinds of new things are happening in this world. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, it is indeed.
Yep. Good. So you mostly work with companies in this area, Scott, or out of town? What size companies normally work with?
Yeah, we talked about it, and when we were finishing the business plan and really starting this thing off, we realized that in this Washington, D.C. area, there's a very high concentration of federal contractors around. So it's from reaching out and talking to these companies' perspective, it was very efficient for us to focus on those. That coupled with my background at Booz Allen and GTSI, I have a lot of relationships. I know a lot of folks in the federal contracting space. So that's really why we chose to really focus on. And there are hundreds of companies around who have procurement needs.
Yeah, and it's not just writing a proposal. There's a whole complex ecosystem involved in doing business with the federal government. When I look at when I started this show 8 years ago, I talked about virtualization, and that was a big deal. And now we're talking about I have a list of 400 topics. It's changing every single year. Mm-hmm. But every time there's a new topic, the question is, well, so if technology like virtualization can assist a federal agency, well, then how do they go about acquiring it? I never, that's the other half of the coin is, well, it's great. Now, how do they go about acquiring it? Now, if they're locked into contract and they have to keep everything on a server down the hall and not use virtualization, they can't take benefits from the energy savings and some of the flexibility involved. So this is the whole, I guess I've done, what, 397 interviews. And the other half of the coin is, well, mobile device management is great. How do they go about acquiring it? I think that's the whole purpose of the discussion today.
And, you know, you mentioned virtualization. That's a great way to start talking about this. Whether it's virtualization or mobile technology or fill in the blank next, technology is rapidly, rapidly evolving. It's always changing. And so government really needs to have flexible procurement vehicles, flexible contracts to allow them to always reach out and get the best and the latest from industry. And so really that's one of the things that we're talking about here this morning is this thing called a GWAC. Probably many of your listeners, John, know what a GWAC is, but just for the record, it's a government-wide acquisition contract. If you want, I'm going to talk a little bit about that and why it's so important to government.
Give us a good definition. I'm sure a lot of people know what it is, but let's define it for us, please.
Sure. It's called, you know, the long name is Multiple Award Indefinite Delivery Indefinite Quantity, IDIQ, another government acronym there. Contract means federal agencies can buy whatever they want, really under a very large ceiling of billions of dollars. And what they buy on this contract changes constantly, depending on their requirements and their needs, but also, importantly, depending on technology evolution and where technology goes. So that's what a GWAC is.
Dwight, when you were in graduate school 15, 20 years ago, did you anticipate this type of rapid change with you don't use even ink, have you used pencil because things are going to change so quickly? I mean, this is what we're seeing in acquisition and rapidly. For commercial companies, it's difficult. I don't know how a government agency can even do it.
No, yeah. And actually, I started my life as a software developer. So I've been doing technology for about 20, 30 years. And even, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, you could see technology changing relatively quickly, Moore's Law, that kind of thing. And when we started the Motley Fool in 94, you know, the World Wide Web was this new thing. It's, you know, people were still in the walled garden of AOL and CompuServe, if you remember that.
Distinctly.
And so, you know, we saw how quickly things had changed. And even now, you know, just based on 15, 20 years, what we used to do back then manually, you know, in the Motley Fool, we wrote our own quotes and portfolio system. Now that's just a service you buy online or get for free online. And it really is the quick evolution, and particularly now with cloud services. The way that Amazon, Microsoft, Rackspace, all the different cloud providers, you know, can roll different services in that you can buy by the drink.
And this is the challenge. I had lunch with an AWS person last year, and he said, big deal for him today. So what are you going to do? We're actually going to meet a customer face-to-face. And I said, really? Everyone buys everything in a credit card online. It's just how it's done, and it's not even assumed that way. So the challenge, Scott, is, okay, so you got this vehicle called a GWAC. Well, how do you adapt to someone like Dwight who wants to get a credit card and spin up an instance of Redshift? I mean, it's almost at loggerheads, aren't they?
Well, actually, the GWAC concept is really designed to accommodate things like that. You know, so if you really take a look at GWAC and why they exist and who they're for and how they benefit government agencies, they're built really for economies of scale from both the government's perspective and from industry's perspective. From a government's perspective, it's government-wide. Anyone can use it, and they're going to get good price breaks on that. From an industry's perspective, these giant GWACs are really the only contract they need to sell off of to get access to any agency out there. So that's one benefit. The other benefit is government agencies can allow specialization in contracting, all the ins and outs of acquisitions and procurement. That's tough stuff sometimes and very, very complicated when it comes to IT. So these GWACs allow agencies who don't have maybe that expertise in-house to rely on another agency who does have that expertise, like NASA Soup Bowl, for example, to really just nail it when it comes to acquisition of IT. But really, and when I go back to this maybe most important aspect of GWAC is its flexibility, the ability to add and then remove and evolve and change very quickly to make sure all the products that the government needs to solve their problems are on there now, including cloud services, including using credit cards to pay for cloud services, including a wide variety of things.
Well, the problem here, Dwight, is that let's say a federal agency wants to get a telephone system and they order a PBX from company A or whatever. Technology changes and all of a sudden there's a new server and it's a VoIP system. I mean, it's hard to build that into acquisition, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. Let's take Soup for an example. With Soup, the way that vendors add items to their contract is that they basically put together a format, a file format, and they send it into the Soup Bowl. And within hours, they get a response back of yes or no. So if you can actually go from a government client saying, hey, we'd like to procure this, to I can sell that in a matter of hours. So Soup is just one example, but they've set it up in a very, very flexible manner so that it's easy to get items on and off contract, update descriptions, prices, that kind of thing. And it's very, very friendly for the vendor as well as for the government agencies.
Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about Soup and Soup Bowls, and maybe we'll even include Chum in this discussion that's coming up. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio. In the studio, Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contractor. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contractor. If you want more information on the company, it's kind of hard to say on the radio. I'll spell it out, contraqer.com. They have a website. You can go there for more information and maybe just give them a call, send them an email and say, hey, I heard you on the radio, Scott, and what do you think about this? And, well, tell me more about this Soup. Tell me more about GWAX and why is 2015, I'll ask Scott right here on the radio, why is 2015 such a hot year for GWAX?
It is a big year. Well, yeah. It's pretty simple, actually. Two of the biggest GWAX out there, the most popular GWAX, are in the midst of being recompeted and or awarded. So Soup 5 was originally awarded, I think, back in October of last year. A number of protests popped up, which is not unusual for GWAX. I can talk about that if you're interested. And they're going through those protests right now, and those should be cleared up. The NIH GWAC also was let out last year and is going through some protests. So protests are not unheard of. They're almost expected, unfortunately, in this day and age. But once we all get through those protests, we'll have brand new, fresh, shiny, big GWAX to use for the government to buy IT and for industry to sell IT. So it's on GWAX right now this year. It's on people's minds.
So there are about 10 active GWAX now. Is that right?
About that. That number kind of fluctuates. There are main ones and smaller ones more focused on specific technologies like medical devices, for example. But the real mainline ones, they're only a handful.
So I got to switch to Dwight here and give you a tech question here. So years ago, you'd buy maybe, this sounds so funny, you'd buy antivirus software and have a firewall and maybe put your feet up and smoke a cigar. The security chain, it's just changed so much. I mean, I met this guy Kaspersky and I started talking about things that are happening and this and that. And I don't know if an agency can take a look and continuous monitoring now. I mean, how can you procure continuous monitoring because you don't know what's going to happen down the road, do you? I mean, this is a challenge, isn't it?
It is. And, in the good old days, you had to only worry about, did I put the floppy disk in that had a virus on it?
That was the only worry. I remember
With spear phishing and a variety of zero-day exploits, it's really, really, really hard. And this is one of the good things about the GWAX is it allows even smaller agencies or offices to procure very sophisticated services to help keep their all their staff secure. So, and we still subscribe to events in depth, right? So it's not one thing. There is no silver bullet, but you can have a variety of different services that you procure through different GWAX to help keep your team and organization as secure as possible.
So, Scott, that's a technology refresh, technology insertion. Is that what the terminology used then?
Yes. I mean, one of the special sauce of a GWAC is, again, their ability to add and remove products from their contracts. And that's what that's called, a technology refresh or technology insertion on these contracts. That's the greatest strength or the greatest asset of a GWAC in the evaluation and award phase of a GWAC really drives maybe the greatest liability of a GWAC. So to break that down a little bit, when an RFP comes out for a GWAC, say Soup 5, bidders, respondents are asked to give pricing for quite a long list of a variety of products, servers and desktops and software and this and that. And so part of the proposal response is to put together this package, this bundle of pricing, and submit that to, in this case, the Soup Bowl for evaluation. Well, what happens is the list that's provided back to the government, it just turns out that's rarely the list that's actually used for actual purchases. Technologies change, pricing changes. The government ends up asking for a lot more than what's originally on that list. So what happens is this proposal comes in with somewhat straw man pricing and somewhat sample products. And none of that tends to be used, yet everyone gets very focused on the pricing and the products that are on that proposal. And when the government goes to evaluate the products that are submitted by their request on this proposal, they have to go through and check all the boxes, all the requirements for each one of those products that are submitted. And unfortunately, it's very easy to be somehow ruled out or disqualified from a proposal process if there's a small error here or a discrepancy there. So the bottom line is, for these GWACs, the greatest strength also in the evaluation and award process tends to be the greatest liability. It's very, very flexible. There's an awful lot that you can put on there. But when you evaluate these things, every single component and subcomponent has to be ticked and tied just perfectly for acceptance. And when a bidder is kicked off or refused an award on soup, let's say, they usually find some way to come back and say, well, you know what, let's take a look at this again, and we're going to protest this, and we want you to better understand what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, and for the listeners, they know it's SEWP, mm-hmm. and we'll put this on Federal's Radio, so if you're typing in SEWP, that's what we're talking about, and they use Roman numerals, so it's SEWP5, and they just call it Soup 5. It's kind of difficult in the radio world to convey these information. Mm-hmm. You can do this in a written format a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, a year ago, Dwight, April 1st, a lot of cloud vendors drop prices. And I can remember talking to software guys, and they said, oh, this is a joke. Hey, this is a joke. And so all of a sudden, it was true. So what happens if I'm working for DOI, I'm working for Interior, and I have a contract, and all of a sudden, the vendors drop prices? I mean, is this going to be reflected in the contract, or how are these contracts structured to reflect that?
Absolutely. And we'll take Soup as an example. For price changes, the vendors will submit what they call a TR, technology refresh, and we'll have the updated pricing that they'll send into the Soup Bowl. And like I said earlier, within a matter of hours, they'll get a response back, yay or nay, if they got everything correctly. So the vendors can easily get items on and off schedule, but also update the information. So this allows the government folks to actually take advantage of the latest and greatest with pricing and product.
So it allows for, in software development, these were dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
So it allows for dynamic pricing to be of benefit to the federal government, whether they're locked into contract. So what the vehicle gives you is the ability to flex with the pricing of the technology itself.
Absolutely. And just because the pricing is what it is on the contract, rarely do people sell for that. There's usually a discount after that. So the government folks can expect that, you know, what they see on the contract is probably going to be discounted because it's getting extremely competitive. That's one of the goals, actually, of Soup 5. Joanne and the team at NASA are really trying to get the best deals for their government clients. Mm-hmm. And they've got a very efficient, effective system and process. And they're really extracting a tremendous amount of value for their government clients. And that's why a lot of people want to use Soup.
So NASA, in the open source community, people like NASA because they the advocates of open source, they seem to be leaders in the area of technology. Are they the leaders in the area of acquisition as well, or are they just the smartest folks on the street?
No, they are. They seem to really have their operations buttoned down pretty tightly. They have very well-defined processes for information exchange between the NASA Soup Bowl, you know, so on the government side, the program management office, and the awardees. They make it very clear what the requirements are. And maybe most importantly, John, they manage to those requirements. So they drive a lot of transparency into the process. And so when a federal VAR, when a awardee is underperforming in a certain category, it's very clear what that is. And it's also very clear what the cure is, what the fix is. So, yes, they've got a pretty well-oiled machine there. Even with regard to addressing protests. You know, so they're going through this process right now, like I said earlier today. They're managing a raft of protests, and they're, you know, wading through that and navigating that pretty well. Probably at the end of the day, they'll make a few more awards. That's sort of speculation. That's one man's opinion here. But probably to get this all buttoned down and ready to go, they're still saying May 1st for a start date for Suit 5. In order to get there, they'll take sort of a We'll be very practical on how we do this, and that might expand the number of awardees.
Dwight, I want to ask you a question. We're running out of time in this block. We'll take a little break and come back. But you know, you both have MBAs. My daughter is dating a guy who has an MBA, and you don't learn this kind of stuff in MBA school. You don't learn how the procurement process works. I mean, it's like I guess there are associations or maybe informal. I mean, you can't apprentice for this. I mean, there's just no – I mean, in my world, there's application software developer. There's testing. I mean, there's different categories we can have, and PMI is there to give them certifications. But let's talk about professional development, even how to understand this. We have 5 pages of notes, and we're just hitting like the mountaintops on this. This is real tough. We get back, talk maybe about how people can learn about this and guidelines for learning about how all these things are changing so quickly. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contracker.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community, plus daily DoD updates mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contracker, C-O-N-T-R-A-Q-E-R. And we're just trying to wrap our little arms around the acquisition process with the federal government. Very, very challenging concepts here from the perspective of a vendor, and by the way, from the perspective of a person who's trying to acquire this equipment as well. In the break, we talked about silly things and changing the rules. My kids used to read this comic strip called Calvin Hobbes, and mm-hmm. Calvin Ball was, you'd change the goalposts, and mm-hmm. We have to have a the right foot or left foot changing all the time. We have technology that's changing all the time, too, Dwight. I'm giving an example. We had Mike Olson here from Hadoop. And they come up with a new product called Impala. Well, game changer. So what if you spend 6 months and you have an acquisition vehicle and all of a sudden I want product 1, 2, and 3 and then Impala shows up? What do you do then? I guess you have to be really flexible with everything.
Absolutely. So it's not just figuring out, you know, how to get product on and off of contracts. It's not just trying to figure out the machinations, but it's also figuring out what exactly you want and what's the best solution for the job. So you've got the government VARs who are experts in terms of what the latest and greatest technology is, and you've got government clients who want to buy that technology. In the middle, you have the GWACs, and you know when we're talking about soup, that's NASA, and they're experts in actually facilitating the transfer of technology and the contracting between industry and government clients.
We have to move into an interesting concept here, a concept called CHUM. to find that and tell, what does this fit in with acquisition?
So the CHUM stands for Contract Holder User Manual, and that's the Bible basically for Soup 5 awardees. They gotta know the CHUM, learn it backwards and forwards, and perform to that. So you know, we've been talking about the value of a GWAC and this ability for government to buy the latest and greatest technology, and on the industry side for them to add and take off products that they want to add and take off. So that's all. That's the good stuff. The other side of that coin is they really need to perform. The industry awardees need to perform on those contracts, on soup in particular. So, you know, they really need to watch their performance, and CHUM lays that out. So it really, like I said, gives kind of a cookbook for here's what you got to do. Here's the information you need to provide back to the soup bowl. Here are the rules and regulations and how you can provide pricing and how you transact business with the government. It's all laid out there, but especially for the smaller business, the rapidly growing business or the set-asides out there who have a lot of experience and a lot of energy but may be a little short on business infrastructure or IT infrastructure, they really need to make sure they're following that thing. So, you know, that's I think the biggest concern coming up for a lot of these awardees is how do we stay in good graces with soup?
Well, Dwight, we start off this interview by talking about you guys met at Georgetown, both of MBAs. I teach at Georgetown. There seems to be an education theme somewhere here. And so the challenge is getting vendors to understand some of these concepts and also, by the way, getting federal acquisition professionals to understand it, because you can't get a master's degree that I know of in federal acquisition, can you? So there's courses you can study. I mean, how do you learn it? I mean, how do you know it?
I know this sounds crazy, but it's OTJ and it's real-time synchronous communication. That means actually meeting with people and talking to them.
That's as good as machinations earlier in the show. Real-time synchronous. Wow, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, believe me, in the age of Twitter, Facebook, and all the other social media, you know, lots of people would prefer to spend time behind their desks, you know, with fingers on keyboards. But it's actually getting out and talking to people where you pick up a lot of information.
How many conversations do you think we've had about the CHUM?
In this year, you know, easily a couple hundred.
And what I've found is that I like social media, and Twitter and LinkedIn's fine. But, you know, in 140 characters, there may be some subtleties there that you don't understand, or you may hear something and go, well, it's contractor. No, the company is CONTRAQUER. Oh, someone face-to-face would say it, but an email or in social media may just and type it in and not find it.
Yeah, no, it's and so you know we had the value of the face-to-face meetings, and Joanne and the Soup folks have really done an excellent job of aggressively managing expectations through the CHUM, but it is getting picking up all the nuance, going in here, having Joanne speak last week, talking to different awardees, where you really understand how people are approaching the requirements and are trying to address that as quickly and efficiently
and
as possible.
Automating it, really.
Yeah, really. Yeah, have to.
So, Scott, if you're just listening to this program for the first time, maybe you typed in SEWP and you're listening to us and the Nationals are playing downtown and you're trying to understand it, are there places to go? Does NASA have any little tutorials or primers or something to learn blogs maybe?
Well, they do have a site. I mean, there's a Soup Bowl site. So if you Google NASA Soup, you get some information there. But it's really the awardees themselves who get by far the most information. So there's some public information out there, but you really have to have a Soup Award to really get access to the CHUM and other things that are valuable.
But if you're a company, John Gilroy Donut Company, and you want to be in that position, I would think you want to understand it before you actually get awarded or something.
I mean, sure. I mean, the best advice I have is to actually reach out to the Soup Bowl themselves and ask for that. Or if they've got, it's a very networked community here in the Washington, D.C. metro area, for starters. And lots of people know lots of people, and there's information out there. I mean, it's all, at the end of the day, it's all public information. It's probably more a matter of how difficult it is just to get your hands on it. So it's very likely that someone who's interested in Soup and being a Soup 5 awardee knows somebody who's got that information. So that, you know, going back to spending time talking to people rather than spending all the time in cyberspace, you know, if you could reach into your Rolodex and talk to the folks that you know. And that information's there. And, you know, we've got some information, too. We'd be happy to share that if listeners are interested.
I think that's it. You can go to your website, pick up phone, call you guys, send you an email.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm confused about this, isn't it? Because every agency has different challenges. I'm sure the intelligence community has different challenges than – I mean, don't want to say that in the air. I'm sure there's people in three-letter agencies that have challenges that commercial organizations don't have. And,
right.
And there's organizations that are really rapidly changing. So, Dwight are there associations for acquisition professionals? Are there workshops or conferences? I mean, where do you think people can learn more about this?
Actually, FCO West was just last week,
FCO
I believe. And that's a fantastic organization and a very rich organization in terms of information. And their events are terrific, particularly for the networking to find people who have the answers.
You know, I was watching a guy from Brocade, Anthony, and he was tweeting from being out. And I go, FCO West, buddy. It's not East. It's FCO West where a lot of the action is taking place. It's just kind of hard to believe. So organizations like FCO, you suggest people join and maybe affirm or ACT, IACT? Do they talk about this?
Well, when you really get down to brass tacks and you want to get really wonky on the CHUM, no kidding, there are lots of folks who really know this, but we've spent an awful lot of time understanding what this is and also really preparing our clients and the folks that we know to use the CHUM and to manage to it. So really, we'd be happy to talk to folks if they're interested in really learning the ins and outs from a technical and an operational perspective of CHUM, what needs to happen to get the information to back to Soup that they need.
Well, and to make sure that that their past performance is stellar, to make sure that they're actually conforming to the requirements and that they are staying in the good graces.
Mm-hmm. So, what would be a profile of a typical customer for your company?
So, small to medium business is our, you know, kind of our sweet spot. People who are having challenges managing procurement, both on the front end, interacting with clients, but also on the back end, who, if they have multiple distribution partners that they want to electronically integrate with. And quite frankly, it's a broad swath of companies that have challenges with procurement.
So, a good referral for you would be CFO of a local company that deals in the federal government, less than $200 million in sales. Is that kind of
sure?
It down?
Yeah, that's about right. A federal contractor, federal VAR in particular.
Absolutely.
You know, not limited necessarily to technology. It could be shoes. It could be supplies. It could be aerospace.
Right.
I mean, the aerospace industry in this town is just huge, isn't it?
Yeah, aerospace is interesting in that there's a lot of regulation and a lot of record keeping, and they have challenges unique to them. But they're all, you know, every industry is we joke, dysfunctional in their own special way. But there's always special requirements for each industry.
Medical devices.
Oh, that's another one. Yeah.
MRO, maintenance, repair, and operations.
That's the aerospace consumables. Folks. MRO is huge. I mean, it's just that $50 million to do, you know, D-check on a 757. I mean, it gets really crazy there. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about technology, maybe find out what kind of technology these gentlemen use here, see if they're card-carrying nerds or not, and then talk about the future of SUPE and NASA and how other organizations can learn about federal procurement, some of the changes involved here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contractor. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Scott Keogh, he's president, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of a company called Contractor, Contraqer. And during the break, we're trying to figure out, you know, what exactly your basic message is. And we had a message earlier, but really what you do, Scott, is you help people understand the complexities of this acquisition process. And even if you've managed to get named to be one of the providers for these vehicles, you still have to understand it. I mean, just because you're there, now what?
That's right. We spent a lot of time thinking about that and talking to a bunch of people. I mean, if I had some basic advice for your listeners, my hunch is that SUPE is going to add some awardees to get beyond this protest period. No one knows how many, but that's, if I had to bet, I'd say they're going to add some awardees. And because of that, I think SUPE is going to be ever more motivated to hold these brand new awardees and the original awardees to the contract T's and C's. And they're going to be sort of aggressively managing to that. And bottom line, John, that means, you know, a word of advice to your listeners and the SUPE 5 awardees and SUPE 5 awardee hopefuls out there, spreadsheets and emails probably won't scale. It probably won't cut it to manage to the chum to stay in the good graces of the SUPE Bowl. So my recommendation for those who are interested in this space, the federal VARs in particular, go and educate yourselves on procurement management technology options. Get smarter on what's available. We certainly are, we believe, a great offering, the best offering in that space. There are others there as well. But that would be my recommendation, is you gotta move beyond manual spreadsheets emailed through Exchange servers to get the job done.
So if there's 80-degree temperature outside and you're listening to the show because you typed in SEWPV, which is SUPE 5, you can get more information at Contractor, Contraqer. Call these guys up, email them, say, look, hey, I'm in over my head. I'm overwhelmed. How can I figure it out? And they may be able to help you. What people are doing, they're listening to these three voices in the show, and they're going, this guy's been around a while. Let's see if they're really card-carrying nerds or not. So I've come up with a scientific test. And we're going to find out exactly what your tech choices are. So people are going to go, oh, really? Oh, Georgetown produces that kind of a nerd. Okay. So, Scott, first question for you.
I'm going to fail miserably.
We'll find out. How many old school desktops you have in your house, Scott?
Old school desktops, zero.
Zero. That's the right answer. How many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
One.
Should be like six if you're a real nerd. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
Kind of, sort of.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have it's a Motorola. No, it's a Samsung. Samsung
Android.
S4.
Okay. And what's the most popular app on that smartphone?
You know what I love is the Parkmobile. That thing rocks, man. You download that thing and you're downtown in D.C. and you can find a sweet spot somewhere on the street and spend $4.25 instead of $20 for a lunch.
Parkmobile.
Awesome.
How many tablet devices we have floating around your house?
See, my daughter's got one of the original iPads, so that's one. I've got a yoga laptop.
We're
wondering
answer.
Who bought that. He's the one.
I'm not helping myself at all right now. But that turns into, it's a converter. It turns into a tablet.
A doorstop?
Well, that too, eventually.
And what was the last post you had in the social networking site?
This morning.
Wow, that's pretty good, yeah. And do you have a mobile fitness device on your person?
I do not.
Mm-hmm. Last book you read was electronic or paper?
Paper.
Papers.
Well, I like
Scott,
the tactile.
You're no nerd, Scott. We got to move to the other side of the table here and see if we at least have one nerd in the room here. You know, I'm a cool guy, okay? I'm not a nerd. We'll find out if Dwight is. Okay, Dwight, break into your house. How many old school desktop we have sitting around the house there?
So we've got two desktops, two PowerBooks, an Air, and a Chromebook.
Did you actually write this down?
Wow, yeah, he is a nerd then. This means he is a real card-carrying nerd. How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
I've purchased one, my iPhone 6, to add to the 3.5s and 1.4.
Well, he's bragging now. He's bragging. Okay. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
At Dwight G.
Oh, okay. Do you have a personal blog?
No, I wish I had time to blog.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iOS.
What a surprise. Yeah. And what's the most popular app on that little phone?
I got to tell you, I cannot believe I'm saying this. The best app that I'm using right now was written by Microsoft, the new Outlook for iOS. I'm shocked that Microsoft has come up with an iOS app that's fantastic.
You get a new sheriff in town, and they're flexible. I mean, now people are talking about Microsoft. What's the new sheriff?
Microsoft's coming back.
Yeah, believe me, they're in the position of being an underdog, and they're relishing it, no doubt.
No doubt at all. And we break into your house this evening. How many tablets do we find there?
Two Kindles, two iPads. I think we're going to add a Surface Pro,
too. He's whelping you here. He's whelping you real bad,
Scott.
What
he's doing is he's running up the score.
Right? he's stomping on you. He really is. What was your most recent post in the social networking?
I live tweeted the National Flag Football Tournament a couple of weeks ago. My daughter was
playing. He is really a nerd. Now he's going to talk about anime next. How many do you have a mobile fitness device on your person right now?
No, but I use the Stronglist 5x5 app to manage my workout.
That's the new answer, because I imagine my workout. Last book you read, electronic or paper?
Peter Thiel's 0-1 on my iPad.
Well, we know who the nerd and the cool guy is.
Eye rolls don't really show up on a radio broadcast.
I wish they could. That was kind of interesting, though. Parkmobile, I'm going to have to try that out.
That's
great. That's a real good one.
Really.
So crystal ball time. We do a lot of sports in this studio. You can probably tell it's kind of beat up. So, Dwight, what's going to happen here with NASA? Are people going to emulate NASA in 5 years from now? Is it going to be bigger, stronger? What's the future of acquisition for my listeners, for my govies?
I think Soup 5 is actually the model for GWACS. The automation, the flexibility, the fantastic service for both industry and government, and the ability to drive really good deals. I think that is the way that we're going to see procurement go.
The automation is there, but the industry side of the coin really has to step up and take advantage. They need to meet automation with automation, really.
And I think Joanne and the team have really said, this is what you need to do. Here's the chum, read it, and this is what you need to conform to. And they've done a fantastic job. I mean, they've really aggressively managed expectations, saying this is exactly how you need to perform.
Can this be applied to the Department of Defense?
Sure. DOD always has their own culture and their own acquisitions, and it's, sometimes it's a slow evolution, but GWACS are GWACS, and they're government-wide. So, yes, short answer.
March 4th, I'm moderating a panel for some awards for healthcare IT innovations. And it used to be that healthcare IT was kind of the back of the room, and no one talked about them, and, you know, there's guys over there, they're specialized vocabulary. Now they're in the front of the room, there's big, huge things going on. And talk about rapid change. I mean, rapid change in healthcare. We talk about mobile devices. Mobile devices in healthcare, we talk about the fitness device, all of a sudden it's on your smartphone. Interesting. So I would think that organizations like NIH, HHS would be pretty good candidates for this method of procurement. Do you think so, Dwight?
Absolutely, particularly as they focus more and more on technology. And there was I won't say the company name, there was a recent health company hack that happened. 80 million people lost information. So I think what you're finding is in the healthcare space, people are very, very focused on security, both services and products, to make sure that that doesn't happen to them.
So can it automate a methodology for obtaining the best price for a certain set of requirements? Is that what, or is it once you're in, then it's automated? Where does the automation fit in, Scott?
Well, the automation is providing information back to the actual contract PMO itself. I don't think that's what you mean. I think what you're asking is automating the actual acquisition of the products. So the real strength of a GWAC is the ability to put on and take off products, not necessarily the automation of the acquisition itself of the, I don't know if I'm just making sense or not, but I think what you're alluding to maybe is like a almost like a store, an online store or a catalog.
I keep thinking of subscription billing software like Zuora, where it automatically bills things on a recurring basis like cloud services.
That is one area where there's still a lot of room for development and innovation. The government generally is still really sorting out, well, how do they pay per use? How is that consumption pricing?
And GSA, this is the issue they have. They're trying to act like vendors in some areas for cloud services. Well, wonderful. How do you measure that? How do you measure
that? That is really difficult. I mean, that is really challenging. And I think we'll probably over the next 5 years or so see a lot of innovation around there, some ideas, some maybe some disasters, hopefully not too many.
And the company to look for is Zoura, Zoura. They're in San Francisco-based company, and they saw this problem 7-8 years ago. Mm. They could see it actually coming, and it's an acquisition, by the way, an acquisition type product that fits in with subscription billing, and many of the same problems you're addressing, they address it in the cloud market.
You know, talking about seeing things coming, lots of software publishers understand that the future really is going to be consumption pricing, that they're going to get away from per server or per CPU or per named user, and it's ultimately going to be consumption. So there are going to be a lot of people thinking about this.
Right. The old school way of getting 3 bids in, getting an invoice, signing a contract, and 3 years, that's like a rotary phone.
Yeah.
That's not even – I don't think my kids are even – my kids don't watch television for one thing. Television is like from the 1950s for my kids. Mm. It's like, well, that's not how things are done because it's not flexible enough. It's not – I can't Skype in and buy this thing with a credit card and dynamically allocate a service and spin up Amazon Redshift and do it overnight and, by the way, do it in the weekend. It's just – the acquisition is changing just incredibly. I can't believe it. And maybe Soup 5 would be a predecessor of Soup 6. I don't know. I'll have to find out.
Well, if there's one contract that's going to pull that off, I wouldn't be surprised if it would be Soup.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. We'll have to come back in a while and find out some of the new progress with some of these innovations and acquisition. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Scott Keogh, President, and Dwight Gibbs, CEO of Contracker.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.